Welcome to the CRE Podcast, 100% Canadian, 100% commercial real estate. Now here are your hosts, Aaron Cameron and Adam Pawatic.
Welcome to the Commercial Real Estate Podcast, powered by First National. I am Adam Pawatic, sitting here with Aaron Cameron at the Real REIT Conference. Thanks, of course, to Granite REIT for sponsoring the video web series. We have a three-peat guest, the hat trick of appearances.
Our favorite,
yeah.
President and CEO of a REIT.
We were told beforehand that he is our favorite. President and CEO, RioCan. Welcome back, Jonathan Gitlin.
Good to be here, Adam, Aaron. I've been told that I should not move my head at all, so the microphone continues to pick up my voice. So even though I really want to stare at both of you right now, I'm going to just keep on staring forward and saying great to be here for my third time. And it's a great podcast, and I'm so happy that you guys have stuck with it and continue to always draw up some interesting information and some great guests.
Well, we're content creators, Jonathan, yeah. And that's why we have guests like yourself on to help us create that content. Adam's favorite segment of an episode we've ever done was a rant you had made regarding your REIT discount to NAV and what was transpiring. We will not go there yet. I'm just setting the stage, okay? Let's just start. Last time we talked, it was sometime in pandemic. We were virtual. We were recording this. You were sitting in your office. I don't know where we were. Probably sitting at home.
Yeah. I remember your kitchen table.
There you go.
Vividly. So
perfect. So those were good years. I mean, there was a lot of market transactions. Interest rates were cooperating. What's transpired since we talked to you then to kind of the last couple of years at RioCan?
Well, I think they were good years for certain businesses and certain REITs. They weren't particularly great for RioCan. I don't think we ever really surged the way we ought to have, because during those times, during the COVID threat, there was a lot of concern around our ability to collect rents, to make sure our tenants thrived when they were in and out of being able to open for a couple of years. And so, you know, if you look at the trajectory of RioCan stock, not to say that's the only thing that we're governed by, but it is certainly a fairly telling area that speaks to the objective success of the company. We never really did see interest rates, the lower interest rates, create a tremendous amount of momentum. There was a lot of focus on our ability to operate. And so what I was doing at the beginning of the middle stages of the pandemic, as I transitioned to the role of CEO, was to get our house in really good shape and operate the hell out of the business, which was a requirement when you had a lot of tenancies that were, they were concerned about their own future. You had some of them that were going CCAA, and then you had some that were thriving, but a lot of them were just sort of figuring their stuff out. And we were trying to serve as good partners to aid them in that. And so I was really trying to, first of all, get RioCan's internal house in order. I changed the team around quite a bit. Wanted to understand what our pillars were. We came out with a investor day in early 2022, where we set forth our five-year objectives. And for us, that was a big deal. That was important not only for our external constituents to let them know where we wanted to go, but also to our internal constituents, who I think really wanted to understand what our game plan was going forward, to have real visibility. And, you know, that related to our strategy around residential, our strategy around how much development we wanted to do, our strategy around where we wanted to take our balance sheet, and really on most importantly, our strategy around our retail portfolio and taking advantage of what we felt would be a really good time for unenclosed retail, and we were right in that regard. That's what I was doing, and I think that it's still what I continue to do, because what's happened is operationally, I think we've proven, as have a lot of our peers, that if you own great, well-located brick-and-mortar retail, you're going to be really, really happy right now. And so operationally, our results prove that things are really good from on the ground. But what's happened since then is that interest rates have cranked through the roof. And of course, there's inflationary fears and recessionary fears. Inflation is obviously here. Recession, you know, I think there's still a debate as to whether we're in one or not, but I wouldn't be too surprised if technically we are in a recession. So now the focus is still to operate the hell out of the business, to make sure we're driving as much revenue as possible, to make sure we're controlling expenses as much as possible to combat these higher interest rates.
In the event you've been living under a rock, let me just do a quick background, and you correct me if I'm wrong. I can do this in 30 seconds, Jonathan, but predominantly RioCan was almost exclusively retail for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And then there was a pivot, what, 7-8 years ago-ish? I mean, with some grayness in the timeline, to pivot outside of exclusively retail towards apartments, towards, let's call it residential.
Yep.
And that wasn't just buy and own, that was develop. you talked about the five-year objective in early 2022. Can you maybe just divulge? I'm assuming it has a lot to do with just, and maybe set some foundations. Stability, durability of NOI, I think, is part of this plan to get out of the NOI, out of retail and more into stabler assets like apartments.
So I wouldn't characterize it as getting out of retail. In fact, we're happy to be in retail and we'll grow our retail platform. I think the right type of retail is very much a productive asset class, I think, now and in the future. And I'll stay there for a second, then I'll pivot to multi-res and our philosophy around it. But retail is going through, I think, a very nice time period because, you know, COVID sucked for so many reasons, but the one benefit that it had was it allowed for a reconciliation of where brick and mortar retail fit within the overall commercial landscape. And thankfully, it was a very important spot. I think both retailers understood this because of the cost that they were spending to get new customers and to deliver things to people's doors. But also consumers started to understand that because we all had things that were stolen off our front porches or that our concierge lost if we were in a multi-res building.
And, or pants that didn't fit.
Or pants that didn't fit. And yeah, I mean, I had some nasty episodes with pants that I ordered. Like, it literally looked like I was in a wetsuit. And then you have to go through the hassle of returning. There's a whole plethora of reasons why relying entirely on home delivery was not ideal. What I think was recognized, and there was a reconciliation around, was that retail centers like the ones we own are really just really solid distribution centers that happen to penetrate neighborhoods that have phenomenal demographics. And the ability to deliver goods to customers' hands was easy. It didn't have to be conventional shopping, but it could have been, hey, let's have them ready. Let's have these goods ready for a consumer to come pick up. And so they really started serving as a distribution network. And at the same time, no one's built any new retail in the last 10 years. I mean, it's, if you look around, all of the new construction that's happening in our worlds and, you know, the major markets in Canada, it's been reserved for multi-res or mixed use, which is really just replacing existing retail. So there's been virtually no net new retail, which makes for an environment where our space is very much in need. And, you know, we're 98% occupied right now at RioCan. And I think that paints a picture that there's just no space to be had. And so that is a pretty good environment for us. So we really like retail. We like open air, necessity-based retail, particularly when you've got demographics like we do, which is, you know, an average household income of $140,000, an average population of 260,000 people. I mean, these are powerful numbers. Retailers love to hear that. So we're not pivoting away from retail, but what we are doing is we are building up our multi-res portfolio. And that's simply a byproduct of having some exceptional land that was underutilized. And as I would say, productive and creative and entrepreneurial property owners, we like to represent our unit holders by saying, okay, we're going to do more with that property. It's worth more. There's more value to be created for what you say, the durability of the income for sure. But also, I would say it's good to have some diversity. And so we set a goal 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, when we had our investor day. It was to get not a certain unit count, but rather a certain level of net operating income out of our residential portfolio. And that objective was somewhere around $55 to $60 million. We thought that was a scale that would distinguish us, make that part of our portfolio recognizable, and hopefully increase the investability of RioCan. That's what we're well on our way to. And that's through a combination mostly of developments, but we have done some acquisitions of multi-res because, you know, the development world, or I should say the construction world right now is pretty tough.
Is that why the focus is on NOI rather than unit count? Because of course, the only way to grow unit count is to deliver units, but you can grow NOI from within the existing portfolio?
Yeah, I think for us, it was just an easier target too, and one that we could explain a little more succinctly. I mean, like just saying like, okay, we're going to build 10,000 units or 15,000 units. What does that mean exactly? I mean, you don't know what kind of NOI.
200 square foot bachelors or all three bedrooms.
Yeah. Well, exactly, yeah. Right? There's a lot of variability in that. But when we express to our unit holders or hopefully would-be unit holders that we want to create enough NOI that it will be sizable enough that if we'll have optionality. I mean, with at 55 or 60 million bucks of NOI, you're basically your own REIT at that point. So there's a lot of different things you can do. And I think it's important to get to that scale. Both operationally, it creates efficiencies and, you know, scale that's important, but also from a capital markets perspective, we think it's the appropriate scale to get to.
What's the retail NOI?
Oh, like 20x that. So okay. Like 500.
So big. So the 50 million is sizable.
Not quite, 10x.
meaningful, but it's still not significant portion of your overall return.
It'll still be single digits in terms of its percentage, and you know, which is fine. And
bite size.
It's bite size, but it doesn't matter. Like relative to the rest of our portfolio, it shouldn't matter. It's just it's on a standalone basis, what is it? And we feel it's a pretty powerful tool. Like our intention is to build this stuff, this multi-res stuff, and own it forever. And when you know retail the way RioCan knows retail, we're also going to think long and hard about the kind of retail we're putting at the base of a building. It's going to serve as an excellent amenity to the people living upstairs, and the retailers are going to love it because they've got built-in shoppers. So for us, like we can really marry the two well because we know retail so well. And I'm not suggesting that other developers around the city of Toronto or other places in Canada aren't capable of that, but you've seen a lot of disasters where merchant developers are putting in retail at grade simply as an afterthought. And I think it's not good for city building. And we really do believe that cities need vibrant retail that's going to be enduring. And that's exactly what we intend on doing. And then I'll add one more thing. I think it's important for us to build up scale in multi-res because quite honestly, I think there is a massive housing crisis. In fact, I know there's a massive housing crisis, and we are doing our part to bring much needed multi-res units, rental units to the forefront.
So what is the right mix then, you think, between the retail and apartment portfolio? You said single digit. Is that a permanent goal, or would you see it start pacing with your retail?
It would be hard to catch up to our retail. We have a dominant retail portfolio and platform, and it's, you know, taken 30 years to build it up. And so if I could snap my fingers and say, okay, well, I can recreate or do whatever I want, of course, I'd love to have a meaningful amount of additional multi-res rental because, you know, you can get cheaper financing on it. It is very enduring. And I would say it demonstrates a lot of strength in the rent that you're getting. But truthfully, you know, I think having a healthy dose of retail is also a very good outcome. So I don't have like a magic number, like should it be 50-50 or something like that. I really don't. We're playing it one step at a time. And for now, our first step and the first objective we want to get to is that 55 to 60 million of residential NOI. And we're well on our way there.
You mentioned construction challenges.
Mm-hmm.
How is that going?
Well, most of the stuff that we have in the ground now, we've mitigated a lot of the risk and the escalations involved in construction. I mean, we've pre-tendered most of our work, and of course, we have a lot of our construction financing already addressed. I think if we were to start a project today, it's ripe with a lot of hurdles. One is, of course, you know, the interest rates attaching to any loans you get or construction loans are now much higher than they would have been a couple of years ago. And as always, I think there are a lot of challenges around building in a city like Toronto now, mostly temporal challenges, just getting through hurdles with various municipal and provincial and federal authorities takes a lot longer, a lot more sophistication and a lot more patience than it ever has in the past. And that creates mounting challenges when you're trying hard to deliver these things in a fairly efficient manner.
Is it a hurdle or a roadblock? Like the point where you would not go ahead on a site?
I wouldn't say that that is the only hurdle. Right now, I would say that it would be difficult to justify building multi-res rentals simply because the costs, they don't yield a reasonable enough return for our unit holders. That's going to change. I really do believe that. And, you know, rents have gone up, obviously, as well. Publicized, we obviously don't want to gouge, but it's a good environment to be a residential landlord. But costs really have mounted. We do predict a bit of flattening out of those costs. And until we see that where the returns are logical for our unit holders, then there will be a lot of, you can call it a roadblock. But that's not just because of the regulatory environment. That's only one element.
Yeah, because you'd be in a good position compared to some others in your industry that have bought land at a price that was more than zero, because effectively you could
insinuate or infer
or conclude that your land was free. And so that must help your pro formas.
It definitely does. But I would say, moreover, the luxury that RioCan has is that we can do a lot of work. We can be very patient because while we wait, it's not like this land is burning a hole in our pocket. It's a very productive, very effective retail asset. And so until effectively that wrecking ball swings and you're demolishing your retail asset, you're earning money on it. You're not paying money for it, you're earning money for it. And then of course, I mean, we do attach a land value to it when we do our, you know, when we publicize the outcome or the return that we ultimately yield on a property. But if it is a discrete corner of a parking lot that otherwise isn't really being used, then sure, that land cost is effectively free for us. And even with that, we're finding it a challenging environment. And if we find it challenging, and even though our cost of capital is ridiculously high relative to where it was a couple of years ago, it's still probably more efficient for us to raise capital than most other builders. And if we can't make it work, I'm not sure who can right now. But I do think those conditions will change. They simply need to.
Best in market interest rates, free land, and it's still just a thin yield relative to the risk.
That poses this conundrum, right? I mean, you guys do have access to some of the best unsecured debt and secured debt, however you want to carve it up. I mean, forget whatever they are today, but they're in the 5% ranges-ish, right? Or higher, depending on what you look at.
Yep.
I think triple B corporates traded at 160 over Canada's, they're in that range. So that's 5.25%, 5.5%. I don't think that's changing in the near future. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I obviously have no idea. Mm-hmm. Costs take a long time to move. You think the value of land is the first thing to go, but you're talking about free land already. So yeah. How do you get yourself into a position where it does make sense to break ground?
Well, obviously on the revenue side, particularly if there's a commercial component, you're seeing quite a significant inflation as well. But I am starting to see front-end trades start to, I'm not saying they're slowing, but we're actually getting calls for the first time saying, hey, if you need us, you know, the shoring, or the excavating, or the foundation folks, they're saying, hey, you know, we have a little capacity, and we haven't heard those words out of those trades in like a good part of a decade. So I do think that you're going to see, if anything, the flattening of some of the physical costs, but labor costs have increased dramatically, and government levies. I mean, the other thing that I will say about building multi-res rental as compared to condo is we're still paying GST. And, you know, that's a disadvantage. I mean, if you are building a condo, you're passing that through to your ultimate buyer. And so right away, there's an effective levy on what you're building. And it's GST based on the value of the asset once stabilized, but you have to pay it well before it's stabilized. So it's like, it's a policy that I do think needs to be reviewed by the federal government, because if, you know, ultimately, I do think we need more supply. I do think that is the way through this housing crisis. And if you want to prompt supply, that's one way to start. I think there's a whole multitude of ways. I mean, I think that there's a lot of good intentions within the government and within CMHC, but I think right now they really need to bear down, as do we as an industry, and come up with ideas that will help prompt more development.
If you wake up tomorrow morning and the HST self-assessment is gone, mm-hmm. do you start moving on projects?
Certainly helps.
Because that's 8%, 7% of budget, right?
And that could be solved in the stroke of a pen, versus labor is going to be a multi-decade moving of human migration patterns.
Yeah. And listen, don't get me wrong. I'm not turning to government and saying that it's only on them to figure out this housing crisis. I do think it's a multidisciplinary function. And I think we and the banking system and, of course, government need to come together to figure out like a long string of solutions to this issue, but one of them would certainly be that self-assessment, and it would go a long way for a lot of developers.
I want to bring up the discount to NAV. It was one of my favorite moments during the pandemic. Aaron and I were recording, you know, three of these a week because the environment was changing so quickly, and we got on with Jonathan, and he had an impassioned speech. We won't say rant, we'll say speech about what the market was getting wrong on the discount to NAV front. And then, I mean, memory serves correct, it was probably in the 12, 13, 14% range of the discount. And of course, we're even more right now for most REITs.
Did you take that today?
That was dreamy. That was dreamy. Well, I think right now there's Adam, I think there's an opaque view on where cap rates should be. I think the impression of the capital markets is clearly that the REITs have it wrong, and that there's a big disconnect between what we're pegging as our NAV and what they think is the NAV. And what I would say is that there haven't been a lot of data points. We've been involved in a couple where I think we've defied some of the perceived logic around where cap rates should be. But there is a lot of, I think, price discovery that has to happen. I do think it's closer to our NAV than what we're currently being valued at. But I do understand why there's trepidation out there. You put it this way, I'm a little more sympathetic now to those who start talking about what NAV should be, because I think that it is a little opaque. But I think that flow of funds is a very big thing, and you've got a lot of money looking for a home in hard assets. I think that interest rates aren't the only dictator of cap rates. And I think that that's something that people will start to recognize over time. But I think in this environment, people are making a very crude conclusion, which is, well, if interest rates are at 6%, then cap rates need to be north of that. And again, like I said, I think it's a little bit crude. There's a lot more that goes into valuations than simply interest rates.
Don't tell Maury that.
Well, Maury, there's a whole other episode we could just talk about Maury.
Maury Todd, being the founder of First National, that Jonathan gets to spend some time with occasionally. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Jonathan, you got to rush off to the closing panel. So thank you for coming on. Really appreciate you taking the time. And it was a pleasure as always. Thanks to First National for powering the podcast. And thank you to Granite REIT for sponsoring the video series here at Real Estate Forms Real REIT. Thanks, Jonathan.
Adam, Aaron, thanks so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
Looking forward to number four appearance.
Can't wait.
Thank you for listening to the CRE podcast. The information from this broadcast is not to be relied upon as financial investing, professional accounting, or legal advice. First National Financial LP holds Financial Services Commission of Ontario license number 10514 and 11252.